But first, sport, and it's Sam Ackerman and Tauranga. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Shall we kick off with rugby, seeing it's about to?
Yeah, well, whether you like it or not, it is rugby season, and here we go in February again. We should be used to this. It's been multiple years now, but even after all this time, Catherine, I still need to kind of check the calendar every time I hear that it's the start of a rugby season or a league season. The encroaching up and up is a little disconcerting, but I think we're ready for a good rugby season, quite frankly. After all the ups and downs of last year, we ended up landing on a great season with Super Rugby Aotearoa, and we're just that from the start this time. Two games every weekend, manageable, bite-sized. You can stay in touch with the entire competition right the way through. You don't need to pretend you know who the Jaguares are, the Jaguaris, or however you want to say it. And that's these conversation points were what was kind of watering down the interest in that level of rugby in this country. Now it's just the derby games all the time. It's not just that. The All Blacks are charging from the start as well. Lots of names you recognise playing in these early rounds rather than being forced to be rested for the first month or so. It's not a soft launch. It's the top teams ripping straight in with the games that New Zealanders care about watching.
So who are the top teams? Who are the teams full stop? That are, because I lost track a little bit with that change last year, which really changed the whole vibe. It felt so much more, well, it was so much more local. But who's in and who's out this time?
Well, so we've got just these five New Zealand franchises, all the ones we know, love, and in certain cases despise. So there's lots of rivalries already inbuilt. As far as the players, as I mentioned, the All Blacks are there. But we're also seeing in this first round, take tonight, for example, in the weekend, for example, we're going to see Liam Squires tonight making his return after a stint overseas. And Julian Savia will be making his return for the Hurricanes, where we absolutely said adios, farewell to him when he went over to Europe, thought that was the last we'd see of him. He kind of looked like he'd punched his ticket. The bus was going for a new destination. But he's back playing for the Hurricanes now with his brother, the Artie, the main name of the Savia family now, but into the starting lineup again. So I think a lot of fans would be excited to see a guy like him ripping back in at this level if he can reach the same standards he did previously. But if anyone's going to tell you that you should put anyone ahead of the Crusaders in the favouritism, I think you need your head read, because they are the Crusaders. This is Super Rugby, and that's what they do. They've got Scott Robertson as their coach, and Razor knows how to win titles. It's kind of, as I say, what he does. So they will be the favourites for me. Really interested to see how some of these other teams stack up. The Blues had such a big year last year. There'll be a lot of pressure on them and expectation on them to aim up as well. The first round bye goes to the Chiefs. They probably aren't too disappointed about the breathing space, if we're being honest, to catch themselves up. It was not their finest last year, and I don't think there's really huge expectations on them this time around. But I am all about the if I'm being forced to make a pick, I'm through gritted teeth going for the Crusaders again, because they still look so strong, so many big names, and a culture that's based around victory.
Its role in New Zealand rugby this year, as we said, the Super Rugby franchise was in a big whole world of pain anyway, and we had this local derby. But what is its role with the whole overall structure of New Zealand rugby and income and broadcast rights, and, you know, where does it sit? Because we know they're in a bit of trouble at the moment, and they're looking for ways out of the financial pressures. Does this have any significance?
Yeah, this will be a big deal, and you're right about the broadcast deals. Now, the reason that the South Africa have had been such a major player in Super Rugby over the past few decades, essentially, it has been a huge source of income for New Zealand Rugby, Rugby Australia, because the international rights that come with a nation that size and the hangers-on is a big deal. So that's always the concern when it's stripped back to just the national competition here, and not even including Australia. But there is still interest in amongst rugby followers in what happens inside New Zealand. We happen to have what is considered by many the best competition around. You could find arguments differently, certainly from the Northern Hemisphere on some of the championships they have going up there in the UK in particular. But It still is a very high quality, especially with the reduction of the watered down games, if you like, of the teams that nobody cared about from Australia or South Africa, or the additions from Japan and the like. So it is a big deal for broadcasting based on the new deal being struck between New Zealand Rugby and Rugby Pass. More than 100 countries now will have Super Rugby Aotearoa available to them on Rugby Pass. Now, where and how they access it, I can't give you all the details, but certainly this is a bit of a landmark deal. It is based online. I don't know if any have any links to your regular television subscribers through it, but they can access it now around the world, which is a big bonus. It'll be geo-blocked in the countries that already have TV deals, like here and in Australia. I think Spain as well, strangely enough, has a deal already in place, so you won't be able to watch it online in Spain. But it's putting eyeballs in front of it is a big deal. And, of course, this is what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the year, Catherine, with the interest from investment firms and tech firms wanting to get in and buy a share in New Zealand Rugby so they can help get those rights out there and make money, make a profit off the incredible reputation that the sport has down here.
I had a very interesting interview a couple of days ago with the former New Zealand Rugby boss, David Moffat. He's going back a ways now, and he's had very...
It's always interesting with David Moffat.
we were talking mainly about the head injury thing, and he's now part of the new progressive group pushing for changes to the sport over that. But he also had comment on the New Zealand Rugby offer that we understand, $465 million from Silver Lake. He was making the point, he did the maths, he did the calculations on air, and he was making the point that the value on that product is extraordinarily high relative to, say, some of the biggest football teams in the world. And his point was New Zealand Rugby needs to be careful. What are they going to want? What's the pound of flesh going to be? And is it several pounds of flesh? How many times the All Blacks are going to have to play and where? It's an interesting take that I hadn't thought about, really, on the flip side of getting into these kinds of deals. Yes, we need the money and grassroots needs funding and all this stuff, but what are deep-pocketed investors going to want in return?
Yep, absolutely. But New Zealand Rugby has been making such calls for a long time, like taking Bledisloe Cup games, making an additional game that no one really had a desire to see from those involved in the competition, making a fourth game to make a Bledisloe series almost redundant, because it's, you know, you want to have best of three or whatnot to make it an easier chance for the trophy to change hands. A best of four by taking games to Japan and the like. It was a money-making exercise. We see so much of that on the end-of-year tour now, where they go play games in the States or wherever they do. This has always been about making money. Now they'll just have somebody else who wants to make that money as well.
Half a billion dollars was his point. $500 million is a lot of money. It rates the product very highly as an international sports product, given that it's a small sport. I guess his warning was, what are you signing us up to? I take your point, but I think it's valid for everyone. And it's got to go around the unions, hasn't it? They've all got to vote on it,
yep.
I think.
Absolutely does. And David Moffat's exactly right with that, is that there is, you know, they're not coming into this, I think, as you said exactly at the time, they're not coming this with some altruistic kind of donation. This is a business decision. They are going to want the pound of flesh that you mentioned of, but what that is, I hope that New Zealand Rugby, and I'm sure they are, they're smart operators, will be going in with eyes wide open on what that is, right?
Yeah.
And I think that will be presented to the unions as well. And a lot of those unions, while they are open to the idea of cash going in, are also quite risk averse. So that's part of the deal, getting it across the line. There is a lot of heritage and desire to maintain the status quo that exists within those unions and franchises. So it's going to have to be a pretty damn good deal to get across the line.
OK, now the Black Caps, they're having a blinder, really, aren't they, in the T20 series?
Yeah, what a cracker. They just don't know how to play dull anymore. They win, and they're winning with this incredible intent. There's a charisma around the way this team plays cricket that hasn't been there for quite a while. And we've always known on their day how good the Black Caps could be. their day is virtually every day at the moment. They're playing to a really high standard regularly. This Australian team is not the overwhelmingly destructive Australian teams that then daylight second in the world rankings that we've seen previously, but it's still a very strong, competitive Australian side. And the Black Caps are doing a hell of a job. And what I love is that we're seeing so much of that skill being passed around at the moment and the contributions. Martin Guptill's performance has been a long time coming, but it shows why the selectors stick with him and show faith in a player like him. Yes, he may not set the world alight every time, but when he does, the world is blazing by his spotlight. That 97 was just beautiful. The way he... his effortlessness nature, the way that he can lift a ball to the boundary, it's cricketing poetry when you're watching him bat when he's on form.
Did I ever tell you the story about the time he got, it was a test match and he got like about 180 or something. He might even have got, did he get a double century once? I was on a treadmill at Les Mills having a wee jog, not very fast, and was watching this when the rights were still with Sky. Was watching this on the telly, and I ran for about 2 hours. I just didn't even notice I was still running. I should record it and just use it every time I go for a run. That was an absolutely scintillating innings. But I come back to the depth. This is the thing with this team. You get consistency when you've got depth. And also those bowlers. I watched the free-to-air the other night in Christchurch, which was a great event, great night. Hagley looked great. There was a beautiful sunset. I was just so happy for them all. And the swing those two openers were getting, and I sometimes look at Southee and think, you don't look like Richard Hadley or Dennis Lilly or Michael Holding, technically, you know? You don't look like you should be as good a bowler as you are. And Bolt obviously has a tremendous swing and that whole left armour thing going on, but they were both making the ball talk. Not particularly fast either, really, by international standards, but just the skill level. And then, as we've said last week, a lineup of quicks behind them.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because what it is those bowlers you mentioned with the Hadleys and the like, they looked like they had this chip on their shoulder, and that as a batsman, you kind of thought, this guy really does not like me. He really wants to take me out. Where Southee and Bolt look like they're just as likely to come down and offer them a coffee. Well, I know Trent Bolt, he's famous for not buying people coffees. He's a tightwad, according to all his teammates. But they look, it's too nice to be threatening, but looks
they ask
can
the
be
question.
Deceiving.
You know that phrase of a bowler.
They sure do.
They ask
they
the
sure
question.
Do.
And they don't look terrifying. They don't look physically threatening or aggressive. They don't even look particularly fast. They're not going to bounce you out. But the skill level and the asking the question of the batsman ball after ball after ball, it really is a purple patch, and I hope it's a long-lasting one.
The skill set available, Catherine, as well, because we talk about those guys, and we were talking the other week about Kyle Jamieson, who's finding T20s a little harder at this level than he had was dominating the test scene, and it's for a guy who just went for $2.6 million to play T20s in India. They might,
there are a lot of problems with that pop increase, did you notice?
I did read that an Australian website that Coley, who's part of that franchise, might be looking for his receipt, which I thought was quite funny. But look, he went for 2.6, and the guy who went for $95,000 in Jimmy Neesham comes up with the wonder plays and the cool head, that experience, just to round out and lock out that game. But because, you know, win by 4 runs is, you know, you need to be on your mettle, and exactly what having that experience does. And that's the different set of skills that someone like Kane Williamson has to call on during a test now in a one day or in a T20 is just staggering.
Now, how much of that season's left, by the way? Do we go into a test series eventually? Do we go into one dayers? I've sort of lost track.
I'm almost certain it's just a T20 series and then we're done. Yeah. So it's best of 5. So one more and she is locked up. Yeah. But there's still some great cricket to come. And, the Black Caps summer. While we bemoan rugby starting sooner, part of that is because we don't want this summer of cricket to end. More, please. But
some people can watch both codes. No worries. The women are up against England today. They got thrashed, I think, in that first match, so he's hoping they can find their mojo as well. Now, there's another test match on that I caught a glimpse of on the news. I'm a bit like Trent. I'm a tightwad, and I've got enough subscriptions and apps for now, thank you. But what's happening between India and England at the moment?
It is the most insane test I can recall talking about. I know that sounds a bit hyperbole, and where everyone always says whatever, just saw as the greatest, biggest, weirdest, whatever. This test has finished with an Indian win by 10 wickets inside 2 days. England versus India. No mug teams. England all out for 112. In reply, get India all out for 145. So on day two, and then within turning it around, and by the way, Joe Root, the batsman, took a fifer and absolutely decimated the Indian team in India. Go figure. And then England all out for 81, leaving just 49 runs to chase down to win.
Were they playing on a goat track or what?
I don't know if they could even call it a track, could you? I mean, that's absolute insanity. To have a test of that nature decided so decisively inside 2 days. I've never heard of the big wigs, the big guns going head to head. Because remember, these two teams are playing for a place against New Zealand in the Test World Championship final. But it won't be England after this loss. Now it can only be India or Australia to play New Zealand in that test. So we won't have to worry about taking on the home team at Lord's, which is, I'd say, a bonus for the Black Caps for sure. But just the whole series has been weird, but that as a test is mind-blowing. Like in previous eras, we might have been talking about the old, has anyone checked to make sure people's phones weren't running hot during a test match? That is insane.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I've always been waiting for the T20 and the shorter game obsession to begin to undermine test cricket, but it never has. Like, you're still getting huge scores from these guys, 500s and 600s even. Look, I don't know. Something in the water, maybe. Now, Joe Parker's in action again soon.
Yes, we've been waiting for this fight for a long time, not just because it was postponed because of injury but from December till now. This has been a rivalry that has been just years in the making. It goes back to the amateur ranks, two New Zealand fighters coming head-to-head, the biggest New Zealand boxing fight between a couple of Kiwis since, of course, that famous Shane Cameron, David Tua, back in 2009. And they are Junior Farr and Joe Parker both have got great reasons to be confident for this fight. So Farr takes it all the way back to his amateur days, where they fought four times and he beat him twice, the other two wins a piece. So they know each other's game. This has been one that New Zealand fans have wanted to see. I have wanted to see it. I'm looking forward to it. But at the same time, I don't particularly want either of these guys to take a loss right now, because this will be definitely a massive handbrake, if not a nail in the coffin for Parker if he wants to get another title fight. It's been made very clear by his handlers, Eddie Hearn, up in the UK on this, that anything other than decisive loss in the title picture is looking further and further away. So he needs this win quite badly. And as far as Farr goes, a loss here and all that momentum he's built up. He's been taking on good fighters. He's got a 19-0 record, but he hasn't met anyone of the ilk of Joe Parker in that run in his professional career. So somebody's career is set for a major setback here, but that's the deal in boxing, right? It's you play for all the marbles. This is a big fight for both these guys. I'll lean towards Parker just for that experience. But if Farr can catch him, he's got a great punch. He's definitely capable of causing some trouble for him.
Do we learn anything about the silver fern and rights there too from this business that happened this week, UFC and New Zealand Rugby?
Yeah, for anyone who missed it, UFC, I suppose the headquarters, if you like, in this country of Auckland City Kickboxing, came out and kind of declared that they'd been told by UFC, the people who run the whole top-level mixed martial arts event, that they can't wear the fern anymore because they'd heard from New Zealand Rugby. Now, they came out and said, look, we hope that no one's telling us we can't use the fern because the All Blacks don't own this, they can't do it. We hope that they're not trying to pull us down of the limelight. Turns out New Zealand Rugby swiftly, when their phone started going off with everybody bringing this up, they must have been shocked. Nothing from New Zealand Rugby, as we're told, but a law firm that represents the copyright rights of the All Blacks have been in touch with UFC, it seems. So the All Blacks, New Zealand Rugby, have come out and say, we completely support the fern being used as an example. So this is a good thing, but it does bring up that level of copyright and who does own the fern. And if New Zealand Rugby do not own the fern, we know that. And New Zealand Rugby know that. Do the lawyers who operate for New Zealand Rugby know that? Because this is a bit of an unnecessary PR blue for them, where they had to suddenly come out and start defending themselves because lawyers are chasing anything with what is our national symbol slapped on it in the sporting organisation. Common sense has prevailed, but it was a great little free publicity stint for the UFC handlers down here, that's for sure.
Just finally, Tiger Woods, another chapter in this troubled story of a sporting genius.
Yeah, and look, we don't want to start jumping to conclusions, but you know, have we seen the last of Tiger Woods as a legitimate competitive player? His back injury flares up often enough to sideline him for regular long chunks. If you've got a bad back, having a fractured leg from a car accident is not going to help that. Now, just before anyone jumps to conclusions and who hasn't followed the story, there is no indication of him being intoxicated or have anything in his system that would make driving an issue or illegal. It sounds like it was a one-car accident, so not crashing anyone else. Could just be a lack of concentration, bad patch on the road, whatever it is. But he was relatively badly hurt to go in for a major surgery. And as I mentioned, he just had back surgery the other week. So I don't know if we see Tiger Woods back to being more than just a sideshow in the competitions that he competes in the tournaments. But golf can't really afford to lose him again. I think keeping around any way they can, they found out the hard way that no Tiger was, all these other great players, but no stars, not names that the world flocks to. I mean, Rory McIlroy had his moment in the sun, but he was no Tiger, and that's batting after Bradman. No one's going to be able to do it. You can't be that. So let's hope that golf has got themselves in the men's game at least to that that level where there is enough talent and stars to be able to carry this through. Tiger doesn't win majors on a regular basis, does he? But he is still the biggest name in the sport.
Thanks so much, Sam Ackerman.